15 Minutes in Washington, D.C. I'm Hayley Channer, Senior Policy Fellow with the Perth US Asia Centre. Today, my guest is Akriti Vasudeva. Akriti is a fellow with the South Asia Program at the Stimson Centre, which is a nonpartisan think tank for international peace and security. Akriti's research focuses on a lot of things. Her areas include US-China-India strategic dynamics, Southern Asia and Indo-Pacific geopolitics, and things like US-India defence cooperation and even Indian foreign policy. Akriti, we're so lucky to have you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Hayley. Pleasure to be here.
My first natural question is about India and Australia. I mean, obviously, we both have backgrounds in those two countries, and the India-Australia relationship has really blossomed in the last couple of years, sort of starting, I guess, from a trade and people-to-people relationship sense. But what's your view on the trajectory of the relationship and where you think we might be able to take it in future?
Yeah, I definitely agree that it has strengthened a lot over the last few years, you know, particularly in the Modi administration. And I think, you know, a lot of this has to do with the fact that, you know, China has become an aggressive actor in the region, and both countries have had their troubles with China. So for Australia, obviously, it's the economic coercion side. And for India, it's all of the kind of skirmishes and incidents on the border, but also other areas of disagreement with China, whether it's on trade imbalance, whether it's on India's bid for the nuclear suppliers group. And I think that kind of has set the stage or provided sort of the strategic environment for both of these countries to come together. And, you know, obviously, we both know there have been issues in the relationship in the past. I think you often hear that there were, concerns in Delhi about Australia's China policy before. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the Quad didn't really go forward in the first iteration. And I think there continued to be sort of misperceptions and mistrust on whether the two countries could come together on this. But I feel like that has changed a lot, and I would give kind of credit to both countries that they've worked together through these issues. And starting with sort of, you know, India inviting Australia to participate in the Malabar exercise, from then on, things have really, blossomed. Obviously, we saw the signing of the Mutual Logistics Agreement in 2020, then Malabar happened. We have seen the Comprehensive Trade and Economic Agreement. We've seen the Australian service chiefs visit India. We have seen also the Indian PATI that went to Darwin and did the coordinated patrol. So a lot has happened in the relationship that really signifies kind of the depth. And, you know, all of the, you know, sort of counterparts that I meet from Australia here in DC or in Delhi or Mumbai are really kind of excited about the trajectory of the relationship. So I'm very positive that it's only going to get deeper.
Mm. I also am really glad to see it starting to deepen and broaden and kind of mature, because in previous years it has been really underdone, or it just hasn't been comprehensive and had cooperation across different areas. So things like the Quad, we're doing things in security now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I like to talk about the Quad and think about the Quad. And what I wanted to ask was actually just to take a step back and reflect on why India has turned towards the Quad. I'm wondering if it's, you know, because historically India has been non-aligned, and obviously China's played a role in that. But I'm wondering if you think it's because of Prime Minister Modi. Do you think it's actually his personal gravitas and priority that he is placing on the Quad, and also recognizing that as being part of India's rise as a major power in the region and in the world?
Mm-hmm. I think it's some of it definitely has to do with, you know, the Modi administration and having sort of a more muscular foreign policy, responding to actually the Indian youth that has aspirations for a greater role for India in the international stage. But I do think that, again, like I was saying, you know, earlier, I think a lot of this is because of Chinese actions. I think for the India-China relationship, after the end of the 80s, there was sort of this agreement between the two sides that they're going to try to keep the border issue sort of going, try to have the border conversations and negotiations, but try to find kind of other areas of cooperation so that everything doesn't go off the rails. So they tried to have kind of that economic cooperation for about 20 to 25 years. But then, you know, starting in kind of the 2010s, especially around the time that President Xi Jinping came into power, things started going south for the India-China relationship. I mean, I think, you know, India's always recognized that China is a long-term threat, but particularly in the last 10 to 15 years, just because of the number of incidents on the border and China really kind of pushing on every aspect.
Every button.
Right. So like I said, you know, there's been, there was a border standoff in 2013 and 2014 and 2017 at Doklam and 2020 now in, you know, Eastern Ladakh, which is still going on. All of those, I think, have given the Indian polity the sense that, you know, this relationship is not going to improve how much ever we're going to try to accommodate China and try to see, okay, you know, if we don't invite Australia to the Malabar, maybe things are going to be better. Or if we continue to try to have conversations on creative balance, maybe we'll be able to convince the Chinese. But
nothing has worked.
That's not going to work because it's true that, you know, India is obviously, you know, competing with China in the region, whether that's kind of in the South Asian region or, you know, economically or for influence in sort of the international system. And so I think finally the sense is, especially after the Galwan incident that happened in June 2020, in which, you know, 20 Indian soldiers were killed, which was in a very horrific, violent way. I think that has really kind of turned the tide, and now...
And there was video footage of it as well, so it was really kind of felt deeply, and you could see the impact.
Yeah, and it's also because there hasn't been any casualty on the border, you know, for something like 45, 50 years, so it was a huge thing on the India-China border, and so I think it became a really emotive thing, and also this is happening in the backdrop of you know, the COVID-19 pandemic and the concerns that we had about China not releasing information about, you know, when the virus was first discovered, and, you know, people are dying. So it was just a whole environment, and then all of these years of trying to repair the India-China relationship that have clearly not worked, and I think that's the backdrop in which India finally decides, okay, we need to figure out a way to balance China maybe a little bit more overtly than we have. And for that, we need relationships with other countries that have aligning threat perceptions against China. Mm-hmm. And that's how you see, you know, India kind of stepping up on the Quad. We see the foreign ministers summit, then it goes to kind of the leaders summit. And things have just kind of progressed from there. And I do think that for India, not just kind of within the Quad, but also the bilateral relations that it has with each of the Quad members have improved a lot in that period. Mm. So we already spoke about Australia, but, you know, Japan as well, and the US, even though there still are kind of murmurs within sort of the Indian system about the reliability of the US, I think, especially because US support to India during Galwan, for example, you know, providing kind of intelligence and information sharing on Chinese troop deployments in certain instances, as well as the US actually loaning India to armed drones, the MQ-9s, that I think has also cemented kind of the relationship further. And I think if you ask, you know, most people kind of in the Indian strategic system, they will say that the United States is one of the most important partners for India militarily and economically.
Mm. Akriti, you mentioned China before and all of the different incursions that China has had into India, and basically just the level of intensity and aggression of mm-hmm. Chinese activity, which has obviously led to India rethinking its foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And I'm really struggling to understand, and maybe this is not something that you or anyone has an answer for, but I don't understand why Xi Jinping would actually go to the lengths that he's gone. I mean, he and Prime Minister Modi seem to be good friends. Like, there were visits to each other's hometowns. There were, you know, shared birthday banquets. Mm-hmm. How do we go from that only a couple of years ago to what we see now? Is it the case that basically China has kind of overplayed its hand and is sort of shooting itself in the foot with this?
I struggle to understand this also, Haley. And I think my sense is that we haven't really paid attention to statements that have come out of China in the last 15 to 20 years. I think, you know, Xi Jinping and before that Hu Jintao and sort of the system has been clear about wanting to be, you know, an international power, wanting to be, you know, number one, to compete with the US, to have influence. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing, and especially after sort of the 2008 recession period, we saw, you know, China kind of become stronger in the system, and it had obviously had very good economic growth up till that point. It had developed military capabilities, and it was really, you know, in almost an unparalleled position. And from then on, I think it's just been about consolidation of power. And I think in the case of India, what has happened is, again, maybe some actions are seen to be much more aggressive than they actually are. For what would seem to India's defensive actions are being seen by the Chinese side as they are trying to, you know, control territory. But that's not the case. The Chinese are the one who started building a lot of border infrastructure in, you know, in the areas that were very close to sensitive strategic areas in India. And so in the mid-2000s is when we see India finally starting to catch up. And now we're kind of at the period where the Chinese are worried that maybe India's border infrastructure is trying to kind of match the Chinese. And I think that's probably why we're seeing some of this. And also, some of it has to do with, you know, the COVID pandemic and kind of the what happened to sort of Chinese reputation in the aftermath of that. And I think there's a lot of conversation about, you know, strength in the Chinese system, right? And from their perspective, which, you know, I obviously don't agree with, but they are always saying, oh, everyone is beating up on China. And so they need to do something to act out and show that they're strong. So I think a lot of these actions that we're seeing are probably a result of that, you know, whether that's kind of the economic coercion of Australia, whether it's the border standoff with India. A lot of these actions are coming from that kind of place of defensiveness in some ways.
Mm. So, Akriti, the next question I have is actually related to Russia, really, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine and how a lot of global attention has gone over there, but also what that actually means for in terms of reflecting on and comparing and contrasting both India's relationship with Russia and China's relationship with Russia and the two responses from India and China. Can you talk a little bit about how those two countries have responded either in a similar or different way to what Russia has been doing in Ukraine?
Mm-hmm. So I hear this a lot, that the Indian and Chinese stance on Russia, like the Russian invasion of Ukraine, is similar. And I don't agree with that. I think it's similar in the sense that, yes, both of these countries have not come out very publicly to criticize Russia, right? To that extent, it's similar. But I don't think the Indian position and the Chinese position on Ukraine is the same. For example, the Indian side has actually provided humanitarian assistance to Ukraine. Prime Minister Modi has spoken to President Zelensky many times. The Indian position has actually been supportive of Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty. India has actually condemned the killing of civilians in Bucha. It did support an independent investigation of those actions as well. It might not have said Russia in the statement, but it's pretty clear from the context that's what they mean. And that's not the Chinese position, right? I mean, the Chinese are much more in the Russian camp. I mean, they're doing military exercises with them. So it's, you know, qualitatively not at all the same position. I do think, though, you know, this situation is very challenging for India, because on the one hand, it is concerned and wants to, you know, support any country's right to a territorial sovereignty and integrity. But it's concerned that, you know, the China-Russia relationship is getting closer, and that might have an impact on the India-China border standoff, because Russia provides, I mean, right now in the Indian military arsenals, 85% of the equipment is of Soviet or Russian origin. And a lot of this is, you know, spare parts or kind of emergency ammunition that you might need. And so if Russia is in a situation where it is heavily dependent on China because of sort of the international isolation it's facing, etc., and China goes around and asks Russia to sort of do something that is not very helpful to the Indian position on the border, or such as kind of stopping these spare parts or supplies, that will be extremely detrimental to the Indian position. So, you know, I hear a lot about why is India still parts of groups like SCO and BRICS. It's because it kind of still needs to be in the room when China and Russia are having conversations and making sure that, you know,
it's there to have an influence and right. a voice in those conversations.
And that Russia's not moving so close to the Chinese that it's going to have an impact on India's security situation. And so, that's sort of what I think about that.
Akriti, we have spoken a lot about India, China, and basically the Indo-Pacific and different strategic dynamics. And I wanted to sort of end our conversation by asking you to reflect on the way that India is moving its trajectory. I mean, obviously, it has grown in leaps and bounds. Its influence is growing. More countries are looking to India as a leader in the region. Is there something that you think India should be focused more on now than it hasn't been in the past, now that it has reached a new status in the region? Mm-hmm. Is there an area of its foreign or security policy that you think's a bit underdone and could do with a bit more focus?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will probably say the thing I'm about to say, and I recognize it's not easy to do, but I think there needs to be much more investment in India's Navy. Because of just the extent of maritime threats that India is likely to face in the future, there needs to be, you know, although there has been some movement made on this in the recent budget, but the Navy is still the least funded of the three services.
Really?
Yes.
I had no idea. That mm-hmm. seems odd because how much of a maritime nation India
exactly.
is.
Exactly. But I think it's because of kind of the history of British India, right? It's the fact that the British had a very strong navy, and once they kind of left India after independence, there weren't as many threats that, you know, India had to contend with, and it had mostly sort of a peaceful maritime environment, except for obviously the kind of the war situation with Pakistan. But I think what happened then is that there was a sort of an element of sea blindness that India kind of got locked into for many years, and so there wasn't as much of an investment on that side, although the Indian Navy always has punched above its weight. So now I think, you know, and this is a very challenging situation, obviously, because to do that, you need resources, you need economic growth. And we are in a period where that's going to be difficult, especially after kind of the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the fact that India is still trying to provide, you know, education and health for its populations. And it has other kind of priorities to think about. But I do hope that there is, you know, more serious thought and investment in the Indian Navy, looking at kind of its strategic environment going forward. Mm.
That's a great point, considering how underdone it is. It sounds how underdone it sounds. Akriti, thank you so much for joining me and providing your expertise on these really complicated issues. I know that India is going to feature so much more in conversations that Australians have and that we have on strategic policy in the region. So I really appreciate your time and look forward to seeing all the other fantastic work you'll continue to do here in the United States and on the Quad.
Thank you so much, Hayley. And I would love to do this in Australia sometime yeah. if you would invite me.
Please come anytime. You're welcome all the time.
Thank you so much.